we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
And the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, December the 18th, 2015, and it's our annual holiday show. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by our guest co-host, Carissa Thorpe.
Hello.
Denise Swanson.
Hi.
Carmen Pierce.
Hi.
And Caroline Carnery.
Hi, Allison.
Also, welcome to Tiffany again, who is here in the control room with me. Hi, Tiffany.
Hi, happy holidays.
Thank you, and same to you. Elise and Jackie are away today. Welcome, everyone, and yes, happy holidays. So today, it's our annual holiday show, which means we will have a musical surprise for you at the end of the show. But before we get to that, we'll be first presenting a segment called Tips and Advice for a Compassionate Holiday, in which we, the Animal Voices hosts, will be sharing with you, our listeners, some of the things that we do and suggestions that we have when it comes to making and serving delicious cruelty-free food for the holidays, giving animal-friendly gifts, and gifting charitable donations to worthy causes. And for our feature interview today, we'll have Michelle Schwegman and Josh Hooten on the show. They are the owners of the Herbivore Clothing Store, which is a well-known vegan store located in Portland, Oregon. But most recently, they've authored a brand new cookbook called Eat Like You Give a Damn: Recipes for the New Ethical Vegan. As they are longtime ethical vegans themselves and animal activists, they'll be sharing with us some of their philosophies, as well as we'll be giving their suggestions and advice on how they strive to thrive during a compassionate holiday season with delicious food and a kind-hearted outlook. That interview is coming up in about 28 minutes, so please do stay tuned. So, the mainstream media headlines scream this week, bacon is better for the environment than lettuce, but how could this possibly be, Carissa?
It's a little confusing how it could possibly be. So, there was an article that came out based on a study that came out of Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that was trying to say that bacon uses less water and other resources that are sort of environmentally detrimental than lettuce does. But I think some of the things in there are kind of confusing, because I think the biggest problem I found was there were links to where you could read the study, but then you couldn't actually read the study without paying $40 to join the journal and get a membership to be able to actually read the study. And so basically it's kind of just going off of what journalists are saying about it who have read it. And it doesn't really address some of the issues. Like, the biggest one that I find is there's the comparison of the lettuce and pork, and it doesn't really say what the water usage is, whether they're only comparing the water that is fed to pigs to create bacon versus the water that's fed to lettuce to grow lettuce. And I think that's sort of a big
issue. If they're not counting the water that went into the feed for the bacon, that's the largest part of it right there.
Yeah, because it takes a lot of feed to grow pigs to be the size to be ready for slaughter, right? And I just think it really, really seems to me like that is probably what has happened, is that they're just talking about the water used specifically in the raising of animals versus actually feeding them, because I can't see how it could possibly add up.
I found it to be a really sensationalist article. It was running in all kinds of major newspapers across the globe. And Chris, I know you have a journalism background. What do you think of when a journalist decides to create a story like this? The journalist probably had access to the study, which, as you mentioned, no one else does. So this is the public's premier source of information for something. Like, just a few weeks ago, the mainstream media was telling us, don't eat bacon, it's bad for you. And now they're suddenly saying, eat bacon, it's good for you. And as I know, on Facebook, people were saying, like all these vegans online were saying, like, oh, all my omnivore friends are posting this on my timeline because they want bacon to be good for you, and they want to show me that they can eat bacon and feel good about it. Like, how do you feel about...
I don't think the journalist would have necessarily been trying to say, like, oh, this is a way to make bacon okay. But it would be, I mean, one of the important things is having balance with things. So when there is the World Health Organization saying that bacon is bad for you and it's a carcinogen and you're going to get cancer from it, and then a story comes out that seems to say, actually, bacon is better for the environment than lettuce, that's obviously something that you are going to want to cover. But I just think it looks like it hasn't been done properly, because there aren't really any sightings from the study even to explain any of those things. Like, there are so many questions that come up from it, and not being able to read the study just kind of makes it really difficult. It's and the fact that you can't actually read the study feels to me like maybe you shouldn't have covered it unless people can actually see it, or you're going to put the right facts in from the study.
Right. I feel people are very susceptible and very easily influenced by mainstream media. And that's why we here were alternative media, and we wanted to bring this up for discussions. Like, you need to think, and you need to see who's funding these studies, and you need to do a little bit more research into yourself. Like, what do you think of that, Caroline?
Well, I think, the source in itself is dubious in this particular case. If you look at Qualcomm, one of the organizations that is funding this research, they have a history of doing really sensationalistic research in order to prevent immigration into the United States. And they have produced results that have indicated, for instance, that African Americans are a retrograde species that ought not to be commingling or with Caucasian people. So this is this is who the research is brought to us by. And so I think that, what is the motivation of doing that kind of research?
Right.
And what is the motivation for doing this kind of research? So the way that they've done the research and the source, of the researchers themselves.
I think it's always best, and the lesson of this is to just always know that you need to go beyond what you're seeing in the mainstream headlines and ask questions, for sure. So getting back to our holiday theme for the show, Denise and I enjoyed an amazing vegan holiday meal last week, which I'm still thinking about. Are you still thinking about this amazing meal, Denise? Is it still on your mind?
You know what? I looked back at the photos of that meal the other day, and I was looking at this picture of apple cider and thinking, why did I take that picture? And then I remembered, oh yeah, somebody said something about this being made from scratch. And I remarked, that's a joke, right? And David Isbister, the host of the meal, said, no, not at all. And he was dead serious. He made apple cider from apples, and there was apple pulp at the bottom. Like, this is, and he described himself as a nerd. So,
and he made meat too, right? And he made this delicious cherry glazed smoked ham.
And a turducken.
A vegan turducken. I know, Caroline, you're going to be enjoying this feast tomorrow.
I sent
Caroline a picture of our heaping plate of food, and that was just like one of the courses, where you can call it like 10 courses on one plate.
I've started my fast already today in anticipation.
As you should, as you should. So anyways, that was plant-based foods, which is based out of here in Vancouver. And I just wanted to bring it up to show that, vegan food does not equal deprivation, for sure. And so it was the most, Denise, you described it as the most food you have ever seen in the smallest space ever. Right?
Just mountains of food. Just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And such variety, and so many different dishes. There must have been a dozen different dishes, and dessert was like a 3-in-1 tower of pie with whipping cream and sticks of fudgy
chocolate
stuff.
Bark kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was very Christmassy.
Caroline, you're in for a fabulous treat tomorrow.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Would you like to learn more about food? Why not? Well, then tune in every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we talk all about food. Sourcing food, buying food, the politics of food. Hey, even cooking food. Food, glorious food. Listen every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
And we'll be talking more about food today on Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM, CFRO Vancouver, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. So the holidays are already upon us, and with that comes spending time with family and friends and enjoying good food and exchanging hopefully thoughtful gifts. But not only that, there is the charitable aspect as well of doing just a little more extra for others in the spirit of the holiday season. So we here at Animal Voices would like to give some of our top suggestions when it comes to thriving through what I like to call a compassionate holiday season. First of all, food always plays a major part in celebrating any holiday, but especially the Christmas holiday season, right? And traditionally, of course, it's at the cost of lives to millions of innocent animals that we humans choose to celebrate over via corpses and death. So tradition obviously is very ingrained into our society. And this Christmas, if you'd rather spare a life than chew on some dead flesh, we'd like to give you some suggestions. So I'm wondering if each of us can share some ideas of what we like to eat for the holidays in place of having a dead animal as a centerpiece of the table. Denise, what are you planning to do for this year?
Well, I'm planning to do what my mom wants to do, because she's really big into the holidays and she likes to have something similar to traditional turkey. And her favorite one of those that is non-animal based is called Gardein's Holiday Roast. So I have already bought a couple of those, and that's what we're going to have.
It's pretty tasty.
It's pretty good, yeah. I mean, if it were up to me, I would make some sort of a pie, some sort of a filled pie, which I have done in the past, but probably not this year.
And I know you've made before a delicious, and I hate mushrooms, but an amazing mushroom. What was it, like a roast, pate roast type thing? And it was very meaty.
Yeah, that's a recipe from a book called New Vegetarian Cooking by Rose Elliott. And it's called Mushroom Pate en Croûte. And it's just a mixture of, the stuffing is mushrooms, onions, nuts and breadcrumbs with a few seasonings. It's very simple. You just mush that all into a ball or an oval loaf, and you cover it in either a bread dough or a puff pastry or a pie pastry, whichever you like. They all work perfectly well. And you just slice the edges and flop it over and braid it. It sounds complicated, but it's very simple, and the instructions are clear.
And as for these sort of like roasty, meaty types of centerpieces for the table, I wanted to just bring one up that I've made with my mom for the last couple of years when I go home for Christmas on the island with my parents. That we always go to this this holiday lunch potluck at the senior center where they live. And it's a potluck, so everyone's bringing, there's a lot of meat there. And so for the last couple of years, just so that there was would be stuff there for me and my sister to eat, and just and I wanted to show an alternative to the seniors that are part of this event. Just like you can have something that tastes meaty and it'll be delicious. And so we made this recipe called, it's called a huge Christmas sausage roast from the Mouthwatering Vegan website, which I highly recommend because all the food there that I've all tried out is mouthwatering.
Yeah, that's a great site. Yeah,
totally. Mouthwateringvegan.com. So it's called the huge Christmas sausage roast. I was looking at the recipe again last night and just reminding myself what's in it. It's just like a lot of like, like ground, I call it like ground round, like crumbles, soy crumbles and that, and sausages and vegetables and onions and that. So it's all like mashed together into this huge roast, and then you cover it in a puff pastry. It's really delicious, actually. And yeah, I remember like for the last few years that we've put that out on the table, people have like really enjoyed it. And I just, like for me, it just makes me feel good to like be able to offer an alternative. And it's not just seniors going to this event, like my sister and I were there, right, and family members and that too, and I just wanted to be able to offer something alternative. Carissa, what about you? What do you like to eat as your main entree, and are you going to say pumpkin pie?
Yeah, I have a pumpkin cheesecake that I like to make, and that's it.
Yeah.
For the main course.
And I've had Carissa's pumpkin cheesecake before too, and you would want it as a main course.
Actually, I sell them sometimes, and most
you can put a plug out for yourself.
You can email me at carissa.thorpe@gmail.com if you want to order one. But I sell them, and a lot of times people actually will sort of abashedly email me the next day to say that they've already eaten it all in less than 24 hours.
So, that's the dangerous
thing. Not too far off from the truth there. But I do like the Gardein roast, but my preference is actually the tofurkey. That's really what I do like to go to and I crave for Christmas. But this year I'm actually planning to go to 3G for Christmas dinner.
3G is a local Chinese restaurant. Yeah. So there you go. So I'd like to talk about some gift giving ideas that are animal friendly, that are compassionate. And, you know, I like to use a holiday as an excuse, whether it be Christmas or a birthday, as a reason to give sort of like an animal friendly vegan related gift, especially to people that wouldn't be expecting it. So this year he might be listening, so I better not say it. But anyways, I like to give books. And Carissa, you like books?
I love books. And I prefer gifts that sort of marry practicality with a little bit of luxury. And by that, I mean something that the person would enjoy and will definitely use based on what you know about them, but that maybe they wouldn't buy for themselves. So for me, I do like books, as we've just said. And one of the places that I think is really cool in town that maybe not everybody knows about, because I have a library addiction, okay? I go to a library almost every single day. But
That's a good addiction to have, I have to say. It's not a bad addiction.
So the Central Branch of the Vancouver Public Library has a little store that fundraises for the library, and it's called Bookmark. And they have some really great gifts, whether it's like mugs with... I was in there yesterday, and they have like mugs with... like moose on them and bears and stuff. So there are lots of like cute little animal things in there too. And then notebooks and lunch bags and even soap. So it's stuff like beyond books. Some of it's related to books and then some of it's not, but it's just really nice stuff. And then another place that I was recently is Front and Company on Main and 22nd. And they have a lot of great things like for the house or just like fun things. Like I saw a mermaid shaped salt and pepper shaker. They have a huge selection of fun socks and tights, and a beautiful ceramic whale jewelry holder that was really cool. And then also along the same lines as socks, Nice Shoes is on Fraser and 19th. And
our local vegan
shoe store. Yeah, and Joanne
used
to co-host the show a few years ago.
She quit the show to go start Nice Shoes.
And so they're located at Fraser and 19th, and they're an all-vegan shoe store, so you kind of can't really go wrong. Like, you can't get a non-vegan gift there, right?
So, and it's high quality too. Yeah. So they really look into the all ethical standards of their products. So that you know, I like gift giving when like you're giving someone a gift that they might not necessarily buy them for themselves, you know? And so that just buying something beautiful. And you don't even always have to buy as well, right? I really like making homemade goodies, and I use, actually this morning before coming here, I work at the local university here at many different locations, and I was just speeding around campus all morning delivering my vegan traditional cookies I give to my workplaces every year. And I went to 6 different places, and on the little tag I always say, enjoy these vegan goodies, and from Allison. They all know, right? They all know. Well, I guess the new people don't know, but I make that, like, it took a lot out of me this year to get these like done on time. I was up super late last night packing them up, but it's really important to me that during this time of the year that I'm able to share something for myself for the holiday season, and just able to spread compassion and just to show people that vegan stuff can be really tasty. And I make 10 different kinds. And hey, here's a little secret. You're all getting some at the end of the show. So just so that you're not like salivating going, where's mine? So Carmen, what are you giving for our Christmas gifts this year?
Well, actually, I'm going to do two different things. This year I'm going to do papaya.
Giving people papayas? Is
I'm
that
going
right?
to give people papayas because I find that myself personally that I start my day with a papaya. And I've had so many people say, oh, how can you do that for yourself? You know, like, they're so expensive. However, I thought that's the best gift I can give people is a papaya fruit.
It's such a thoughtful
gift. And the other thing is, I'm going to give people chocolate this year. My daughter actually sells chocolate at Greens and Frulution. And I thought, you know what, this year I'm going to just give everybody chocolate, raw chocolate.
You know, you can't go wrong with that. No one's going to say, don't give me chocolate.
No, and, they're definitely not.
And it's raw vegan chocolate.
It's raw
right?
vegan
I
chocolate.
I know you do all organic in that. So
yes,
this is like
it
the
is.
Nicest
all
stuff
all organic.
Can get.
And you can eat as much of that chocolate. It's guilt-free. Again, there's no you know, there's no guilt. You can
well, there's
eat
no
as much
guilt.
As, there's
well,
no guilt.
Well, you're not killing any animals. You're not taking baby calves away from their mothers. There's really no guilt, and it's high quality, and especially the papaya too, right?
Yes.
Like as you were saying, people won't buy a $9 papaya for themselves, so you'll give it to them as
a gift.
I'm
going to give them a gift this year, so everybody knows they're getting a papaya from me.
That's a beautiful gift.
Thank you.
So I wanted to talk about year-end charitable donations as well. As I mentioned before, at this time of the year, we're thinking about gift giving, and we're not necessarily just doing it to our friends and family, but extending that compassion and that gift of giving just to perhaps charitable organizations that we support around the city. So I wanted to see what kinds of suggestions you have. So Denise, who would you like to support this year for your end of the year gift giving suggestion?
Well, I mean, I do donations throughout the year, not specifically at Christmas time, but as I was mentioning, whenever I come across the advertisements sponsored by Vancouver Humane Society on the Vancouver City buses, remind me, what do they say? Why
love one but eat the other?
Why love one but eat the other? And it's got
very effective.
A giant picture of a pet versus a farmed animal, and just to make people think about what is the difference between them and the difference in the way that we treat them. And that always inspires me to want to support Vancouver Humane Society.
Yeah, for sure. And Caroline, who do you have as a suggestion?
This year, I'm going to be giving a gift to Mercy for Animals. And I'm so thankful to this group. This is the group that has the undercover investigators, and they go into the factory farms and they film and bring information forward that results in numerous prosecutions of people against animals in both Canada and the United States. And I think that without their incredible work, animal rights wouldn't be able to be moved forward in the way that it is. And so many of us wouldn't know what's going on behind the scenes. So I just can't thank them enough. And that's where my dollars are going to go this year.
And I strongly second that. Mercy for Animals is fabulous.
Right. And on both fronts, Vancouver Humane Society and Mercy for Animals, if our listeners want to learn more about them and the work that we do, we've done interviews with both those organizations several times. So check out our website, animalvoices.org, to hear more. Carissa, what about you? What's your suggestion for this year?
I have two. So I would say one, if you want to sort of, you can even see it in action, there's Happy Herd Farm Sanctuary in Aldergrove where you can go and visit the animals. There's cows and pigs and chickens and there's a donkey and you can meet all of them. And they're a great organization to, if you want to be able to see sort of immediate results of helping farmed animals. And then another one that I was thinking where this is something where you can just donate your time is over the holidays. I'm sure lots of people who probably volunteer throughout the year go away on holidays or go back home for Christmas. And so I'm sure local shelters probably need people to help with cleaning out kennels or cages and walking dogs and things like
that. I love
that.
That's a great idea, giving your gift of time. But Happy Herd, I believe, needs help as well. I know,
oh, do they?
Yeah, Darren, who hosts the show, he goes there every Wednesday.
Yeah.
He goes all the way to Aldergrove. Yeah. He doesn't have a car because he's dedicated. So, yeah, you can check them out and see that. So, finally, for my final suggestion, I would like to humbly suggest that people who are listening to this program right now might want to donate to Vancouver Cooperative Radio in the name of Animal Voices. That's us here who do this show. We do this show every Friday, and this is something that it comes as, this is basically like doing this show is a gift to everyone who is listening and who has access to this podcast online, which is everyone. And I do this just as my charitable service to the world. But in order to do this, like I do this as a volunteer, right? And we're all here as volunteers today, but we are a nonprofit organization, charitable organization, and we do rely on the support of our donors. So if you wanted to give a gift to Animal Voices to keep the voices of us hosts here who talk about animal advocacy issues every week and just try to spread that message of compassionate living, we recommend that you donate to Animal Voices, and you do get a tax receipt at the end of the year as well. So you can go to cooperadio.org and make a donation there. So I just had to put that little plug in. Like, that wasn't the whole purpose of this segment disclaimer here, but, you know, we are a charity. So, of course, I've got to say, please donate to us. So however you choose to spend this holiday season, we hope you will do it with consideration and kindness for all creatures, human and non. And now we have some news, Denise.
Yes. for my first news segment, I just discovered this yesterday. I was very excited to find that there is a new peer-reviewed journal called Animal Sentience, an interdisciplinary journal on animal feeling. This will be of interest to all who are concerned with the current empirical findings on what, when, and how non-human animals feel, along with, and here is a mouthful, the practical, methodological, legal, ethical, sociological, theological, and philosophical implications of the findings. The abbreviation is ASENT for the journal. ASENT is the first journal to focus on the capacity of non-human animals to feel. Feeling can be any sensations such as seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, moving, wanting, pain, pleasure, emotion, mood, anticipation, and intention. We distinguish sentience, the capacity to feel, from sapience, the capacity to think. But it also feels like something to think. And people are welcome, the organization welcomes submissions concerning animal consciousness and cognition. And the website is animalstudiesrepository.org.
You know, I think that's a great progress, because it was only years ago that scientists, and I think they are all coming to terms now that animals have sentience, right? And now they're actually creating a journal to discuss this.
It's about time.
Absolutely.
Animal welfare workers have created a new online database to track the journey of companion animals in U.S. shelters to provide more comprehensive statistics on the problem. While millions of companion animals find themselves in shelters every year, accurate statistics have never been available as to how many animals go through shelters, why they end up there, if they were adopted, if a rescue network saved them, or if their time ran out and they were euthanized. The database is called the Shelter Animals Count, the National Database Project, and it took 4 years to launch. The data collected is modeled on the U.S. Census. The web address is www.shelteranimalscount.org. Previously, individual agencies have relied on rough estimates when statistics were needed, and even just the precise number of shelters and rescue groups is unknown. American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals estimates that there are 13,600 shelters across the country that take in 7.6 million companion animals a year. Of those animals, 2.7 million are euthanized, the same amount are adopted out, and 649,000 are returned to their owners. Rescues are usually dedicated to saving one breed at a time and can be operated out of a home, so they are even harder to count than shelters, which are most often run by counties or cities.
In other news, news about birds. You may have heard the term bird brain. Well, it has been discovered that bird brains are actually very capable brains despite their size. We know that parrots can talk and dance and use tools. We now know that a certain group of parrots that has been studied in an aviary use pebble tools such as date pits to grind the calcium off the interior of shells and then lick the powder from the tool. They also pass tools to each other. The shell scraping is more frequent before breeding season, which makes sense since it takes a lot of calcium to build eggshells. The males, interestingly, are usually the ones to do this action, but it is likely that, as with other food, they regurgitate it and pass it on to the females. So there you go. Smart birds.
Once again, you are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
For our feature interview today, we have Michelle Schwegman and Josh Hooten on the show. Based out of Portland, Oregon, they are entrepreneurs and ethical vegans who first satisfied their passion for saving animals by founding the store Herbivore, a successful line of messageware and clothing that promotes a cruelty-free lifestyle. In a most recent project, they have just published a new cookbook called Eat Like You Give a Damn, Recipes for the New Ethical Vegan. And they are here today to share their experiences living as ethical vegans and animal activists and how they bring these ethics into the holiday season. Hello, Michelle and Josh, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi. Thanks for having us. It's nice to be back.
Well, thanks for coming on the show today to impart your knowledge with us on your many years of veganism and how this has shaped your lifestyle as animal activists. To start, I'd love it if you could each briefly share your stories of your journeys on this path and how they started for you.
Yeah, sure. This is Josh. I went vegan in 1999. I had been vegetarian for a little bit, maybe a year and a half tops. I had a dog that I had kind of rescued from a roommate who wasn't really able to take care of him. And he really just kind of changed the way I felt about animals. I realized that how much I loved him and how much I cared for him and all of the sacrifices I was making as a young single person to make sure that he was cared for. And it just occurred to me that I didn't not care about other animals, but I was eating them. And it didn't make sense to me that I had this one animal I would give everything for. And then these other ones that I maybe thought I gave a shit about, but didn't. And then I moved somewhere. I moved to Chicago after that, and I realized that I didn't really understand a lot of the issues about being vegetarian, let alone vegan. So I read up on it, and it changed the way I felt about eggs and dairy. I never knew anything about that stuff. So it once I had some facts, I wasn't really happy about it, but I knew I had to be vegan because there was just no. I couldn't unlearn that information. So
it wasn't you who read Diet for a New America, Josh?
Yeah, I read that was the book that did it. I distinctly remember laying in my bed in Chicago, all by myself with my dog, in my studio apartment and just laying there and putting the book down on my chest and thinking, oh great. Now I have to be vegan. What is that? How do I do it? What am I gonna eat? What am I gonna do? I didn't know any vegans. But I knew, you know, I just was like, well, I can't forget that I just read about eggs and what happens. So, you know, I got up the next day, I went to the bookstore, got Animal Ingredients A to Z, a really bad cookbook, and started.
And what about you, Michelle? How has this journey started and evolved for you?
Well, I met Josh 2 weeks after he became vegan, and I was not a vegetarian or interested in any of that or aware of anything about animals. I just was doing what I'd always done. And I knew that I liked him, and I knew that I knew how to cook better than he did. Mm-hmm. So I would just make him vegan food. And then I would, you know, put cheese on mine. And I actually transitioned first to becoming a vegetarian and then later to being vegan. And what happened was that I was a totally selfish person. And I complained to him that it was so difficult to go out to eat and we can't go to brunch and blah, blah, blah. And if he would just become vegetarian, it would be easier. So he said, okay, I'll become vegetarian if you read Diet for a New America. And so I read Diet for a New America thinking, oh yeah, we're going to brunch. And then of course I was, you know, completely shocked and angered and motivated to become vegetarian myself. And I did cling to cheese for quite a few years, for about 2 more years. And then I one day was like, this is so ridiculous. I know I should not be eating this, so I'm going to stop. And I just stopped.
And I never really planned on going back to being vegetarian. I assumed that if she read the book and was like, okay, cool, now you have to be a vegetarian. That would just kind of be the end of it.
I was thinking that that was your plan. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your store, Herbivore, in Portland. The basis of your store is that you create messageware that raises awareness of animal rights issues and veganism. So I want to take this opportunity to talk a bit about that. For those of our listeners who aren't familiar with the concept of messageware activism, can you briefly explain for us what your philosophy is behind how messageware can effectively help the animals?
Well, you know, t-shirts are historically used to promote whatever, you know, political campaigns, a product, I mean, anything. And we use that exact same idea. We have this burning desire for the world to be kind to animals and for people to go vegan. And so we feel like we make it look good and we put it on a fashionable shirt and it has good design. Who's not going to want to be part of this with us? And, you know, for me, it's, I practically wear something that's herbivore every single day because my whole life is about spreading compassion and talking to people and just presenting this idea that this is what veganism is. It's not some crazy fringe thing. It's, you know, it's like carrying a well-designed protest sign or just a visual rallying cry for people to be more compassionate. So that's what we believe and that's what we live.
And what message are you wearing today? I can't quite read it.
Eat like you give a damn.
Oh, same title as the book. I bet that's one of your most popular ones too, right?
Yeah, that one we started using that one in 2007. And I think that it was just a result of like a lot of lefty leaning people, you know, starting to care about things but caring about things in a way that was really still just putting their own wants and needs first. And I've always thought that veganism really was kind of a good way to strike at the roots of a lot of other social problems. And so to me, all these other people like, oh, you know, and this was 2007. So, you know, there was a lot of people telling everybody to change their light bulbs and drive less and all this, which is great. Do all of that stuff. But to me, I was like, why don't you just eat like you give a damn? And then you won't. Then a lot of these problems actually really get impacted 3 times a day instead of just changing your light bulbs, you know? So that it was kind of a, it kind of came out of a place of frustration what I felt was kind of small steps, you know, when in the world right now, we need much bigger steps. So eating is a much more proactive way of affecting, you know, human rights, animal rights, workers, you know,
health.
Environment, health, you name it. Every issue that I could possibly care about that I've looked into has got some sort of a relationship to animal rights.
So I just wanted to talk about that you're both parents of a vegan child named Ruby, and I love that you address this issue of raising vegan children in your book. I'd love you to speak on this a bit, please, if you can describe what it's like to raise a child vegan and what makes Ruby different than other children in this way.
Well, what makes Ruby different is that she's the most amazing child the world has ever seen.
She's the best child in the world, right?
Come on. of course, every parent thinks that. But you know, raising a kid the way that, you know, we're going to raise Ruby the way that we want to live our own lives. And, you know, it's people say or ask, you know, what are you going to do when she wants to eat meat? Or, you know, do you really think it's right to force your beliefs on your child? And the reality is that that is what parenting is. Parenting is taking what you believe to be right, your set of ethics or your beliefs, and teaching them to your child. Our stance in this world is that we are looking at everything through a lens of being ethical vegans. And like we were just talking about with the phrase, eat like you give a damn, being an ethical vegan makes you aware of so many other things, whether it's environmental or human rights or what have you. So we just approach raising Ruby with to be compassionate for humans and for animals. And it's not about, you know, brainwashing her or depriving her of anything. It's about teaching her to not think of herself before she thinks of any other creature that might be on her plate. So So
yeah, and I mean, in terms of like forcing our beliefs on her, yeah, of course. Just like I force her not to smoke, and I would force her not to vote for Donald Trump, and I would force her not to do all sorts of stuff.
Not like, to be mean to people, not to kick a dog.
Right.
And not to steal.
And we don't have to force her to do any of that, just like we don't have to force her to be vegan, because she understands that chickens and cows and all the animals that are in our food system, so-called food system, have the same feelings and body parts as our rescued dogs, and she loves them. So it's like, well, we're not going to cut them apart and eat their bodies. What is the difference? And they're, to her, having always been raised this way, there is no difference. So she doesn't have this huge disconnect that I grew up with and most people grew up with, where one day it dawns on you that the animal you're eating was alive. You know, it didn't just come from a grocery store. It actually used to be a living creature. So, I think she'll just grow up always having known. And that, I think, is a great step, you know.
Absolutely, for a child to be aware, which many adults aren't even aware. So the book Eat Like You Give a Damn, it's a book for the new ethical vegan, you call it. Can you describe what this means to you? What is the new ethical vegan, and what can they get out of your book?
Yeah, so, when we were kind of conceptualizing what to make the book about, I remember the day after, the morning I talked about, or the night I talked about earlier, where I realized I had to go vegan. I went to the bookstore to get all the books I needed so I could now be vegan. And there wasn't a book that did everything I needed it to do. So I went home with like 3 or 4 books. And I needed one that was like, here's some moral support. Here's how to cook really simple, really good food. Here's some really basic ways to promote your case when people give you a hard time. Here's how you can, you know, deal with some common social situations. So we wrote the book that I needed in 1999 when I went vegan in a town with no vegan friends and, you know, not much else going on for me vegan-wise. So the new ethical vegan, we mean somebody that just went vegan for whatever reason. But our take was the ethical side of it. And it's like, okay, you just found out something that appalled you so much, you're going to quit eating all this stuff and you're going to make this huge change. This is a tool for you to do everything from stand up for yourself, to understand the argument better, to cook really great food.
Yeah, and I like that in your book you say to be vegan doesn't mean that you have to be dissatisfied. There's a misconception that vegans eat like rabbits. And I know, especially where you live in Portland, one of the vegan meccas of the world, well, whenever I go there, I just completely just go out and like eat the most amazing food ever. So maybe you can address that a bit and to speak on how going vegan is not equivalent of being deprived.
It is so the opposite. It is such a more varied and rich opportunity in the world of food to have spices and ingredients and, you know, I mean, most people don't eat beans except for maybe in like a Taco Bell burrito. There's like hundreds of kinds of beans and they're delicious. And I mean, there's so many things. And it doesn't mean that we only like salad. You know, we have a section in the book that I feel really strongly about that says it's okay for vegans to like meat and cheese because meat doesn't have to mean the flesh of an animal. There's a beef steak tomato, you know, the meat of the matter is not mean the flesh. It means the bulky part and it's the part that you can bite into. And vegan food has plenty of that, whether it's a product that you buy at the store or something that you can make on your own. And the same with cheese, you know, it doesn't have to be from the milk of some other mammal. It can be from a nut or from a bean to make it cheese. It's obvious, but there's a lot of habits that are very carefully marketed to and crafted in the world that we just have to overcome. And we just have to remind people all the time that, you know, it doesn't have to be from a cow to be milk.
And I want to talk about some of the food in the book and what you like to make for the holidays. Can you tell us about some of your favorite recipes in this book and what that would work well for the holiday season?
There is the perfect Thanksgiving or a Christmas meal or any holiday meal in the wintertime. They're all in there. The Praise Seitan vegan roast, the Brussels slaw. There's a veggie Wellington that is so delicious that has a puff pastry crust. There are a couple of gravy recipes in there. You can make biscuits and, you know, just like the mashed roots. We have a bunch of recipes that are like go-to. So, you know, if you don't know how to cook greens, which Josh didn't know how to cook greens when he went vegan. He didn't know how to make mashed potatoes. Very simple things that people can learn how to make, complete with pictures, which is the other thing that I think can be very helpful in cookbooks. So you know what it's supposed to look like. So all of those things are great for the holidays.
And I'm wondering what you like to have to replace the dead animal centerpiece that is commonly found on the tables during holidays.
Well, this year for Thanksgiving, we made the Praise Satan vegan roast, and we made two different roasts, and we had one that like when we had our meal, and then we had the other for all the leftovers, because half of the fun is in the leftovers. And what else did we make? We often will do the Wellington, or we will take the beet burger recipe and make it into a meatloaf because it works brilliantly. And then just bake it for 45 minutes at 350.
And just for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with seitan, tell us about it and why should we praise it?
Well, seitan is not below the ground. Seitan is the protein of the wheat plant. So all of the starch is washed away and you are left with the protein, which is a stretchy, meaty-like kind of flavorless flour that you can flavor with any type of spice blend that you like. And so, you know, using poultry seasoning or thyme and sage and all of these kind of earthy fall flavors make a really great wheat meat, some people call it, or seitan, which is a lot like meat from an animal, except for it's meat from a plant.
And you have a Praise Satan t-shirt too, don't you?
We do. We don't currently print it, but it comes and goes.
I've seen it around the world, people wearing it many times. So what do you two do for the holidays with regards to spending time with family and friends? That's one of the themes of today's show. I'm just wondering how you navigate that and how do you incorporate animal activism into your celebration of the holiday season?
You know, activism, we try to always donate to as many sanctuaries and do fundraising. We sometimes go out to work parties at sanctuaries locally. So, you know, we've done Fur Free Friday protests in the past, which happen after Thanksgiving. But really for us, the holidays are an opportunity to have a day off all together and eat good food and be with people we love. And we are so fortunate that we have so many friends that have the same ethical stance that we do. And then we also have friends that, while they may not be vegan, they love being vegan with us. And it's like a fun thing for them to do is to have a vegan Christmas or a vegan New Year. And we plan amazing meals because it's always about the food on the holidays. And they love it to be vegan. And when we are with our families that don't want to be vegan, you know, I have learned over the years that the holidays are really not the time to have a discussion unless somebody really wants to have a discussion and be respectful. And otherwise, I do what my mom taught and I kill people with kindness. And if they want to make a crappy joke, I'm going to smile and just say, oh, you know, I've heard that one before, or just turn around and walk away and talk to somebody else. It's not going to be good to, you're not going to change somebody's mind over a plate of dead flesh, you know, and I'm not going to call it dead flesh. I'm just going to let people do what they're going to do because I want them to let me do what I'm going to do. And sometimes it sucks, but it's better for everybody in the end, especially the animals.
And I've known plenty of people over the years who were in a relationship with someone who was not vegan and who would be a total jerk to them. Based on their own insecurity and guilt. And over the years, the person who was vegan remained consistent in their beliefs and kind and didn't give the person who was antagonizing them the fight they were looking for. And I've had plenty of friends who over the years were like, oh, guess who's vegan now? You know, and it's because the person was acting badly for very obvious reasons. They felt guilt or they felt challenged or they felt put upon. And then without, you know, if you want to slam the door on them and start a fight, they're never going to go vegan. But if you remain kind and you remember that what your ultimate goal is to save animals, fighting with that person is not going to save any animal. But if you leave the door open, someday those people may come around. And I've seen it happen many times, and I know it's not easy to do. And I am definitely also of the belief that if you are being given a hard time, you can totally go into self-preservation mode and just walk away. You don't have to have those conversations with people who are only trying to give you a hard time. I think we have a responsibility to have those hard conversations with people that want to know and might actually want to learn something from you. But we all know that a lot of people who give us a hard time, they're not looking to learn anything. They're just looking to be, you know, defensive and whatever. So I feel like people can legitimately, you know, straight up say, you know, this is going to be a really hard holiday if you're going to treat me like this, or just, you know, back away. If there's no opening for information there, then don't waste your time.
I think too, having the ethos of just trying to be kind, like especially over the holidays, that goes hand in hand. So I guess that would be some good advice, right?
Yeah,
definitely.
I've never been convinced of anything when somebody yelled it at me, you know. So.
And also, people can't argue with feeling. If you say, "I don't feel like it's right for me to eat animals, and so I don't."
And that's actually, I think, sometimes a common question you might get at these family dinners for sure as well. Well, thank you for coming on the show today, Michelle and Josh, to speak about your new book, Eat Like You Give a Damn, and to give us your advice for living a compassionate holiday this season. You can find a link to the book on our website, animalvoices.org, and also be sure to check out Michelle and Josh's store website at herbivoreclothing.com. Thanks so much and have a happy, compassionate holidays.
Yeah, thank you, Allison.
Thank you. You too.
So you have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. I hope you enjoyed today's show. It's not quite over, but I just wanted to say you can join us for our next two shows. They will be not live shows because they're going to be running on Christmas Day and New Year's Day, and I'm not going to be here. I'm going to be celebrating a compassionate holiday, as you all know. So you can expect to hear some past holiday shows for the next couple of weeks. We here at Animal Voices, we want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows from our archive or download them as podcasts. You can read our show blog with detailed links on there and resources. You can also subscribe to Animal Voices Vancouver on iTunes. Please stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. We also are in need of volunteers to help keep the show going. Specifically, if you have a desire to produce shows, which means planning out shows and conducting interviews and coordinating the whole scheduling of the show, we need people to do that. So if you're interested in helping out and you're available on Friday afternoons, please send me an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And in general as well, just send us your suggestions and comments about the show. So we're going to be closing the show today with two songs. The first one is a live song. Are you all ready in there? Are you guys excited?
Me.
Yes. Ready.
Okay, so this is Silent Night. Now, Carissa, you wrote the lyrics to this. You changed them around a little bit. Several years ago, you were saying 2011 when we last performed this. Any words of how you did the lyrics?
It's pretty close to the original, but when I was rewriting it, I was kind of thinking of like a mother cow and her calf and how I feel like they should just sort of stay together, but so often they are taken away from one another in order to create cheese and milk products. So that's sort of who I was picturing when I rewrote it a little bit.
Yeah, so just listen to the words and see how Carissa has done that. It's very lovely. So it's Silent Night. I'm going to be playing my clarinet. And stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith after this. And then we've got one other song after this called Please Daddy Don't Eat Meat This Christmas by Larry Brown. Just a fun little song. So thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. Have a happy, compassionate holiday. And remember to be kind to the animals.
Silent night, holy night. Oh. Radio beams from thy holy face with the dawn of redeeming grace. Blessed by your birth, all are blessed by your birth.
Across your face, we all know just what you're going.